Well, I'm very happy to see a fine turnout like this. And I suppose that it's best thing to do is to simplify this matter by letting you ask me whatever questions you would like to. If you'll permit me just to say a word in terms of the context of these questions. Number one, my trip took me to 10 countries, and the express purpose of the trip might be categorized into, or might be placed into, about three parts. My first duty was as a delegate to UNESCO, which was in Paris. Senator Cooper and I represented the Senate at that meeting. We are an active participant in UNESCO, and were keenly interested in the kind of program that the organization was going to adopt. I felt the American position was pretty well taken care of. The second responsibility was as a delegate or an observer to the Nuclear Test Conference at Geneva. I attended that conference with our chief of delegation, Mr. Wadsworth, and came away from it, left it at a time when I thought there was an opportunity for decided progress. And I notice here today a dispatch that is laid before me that indicates that Russia today accepted a binding treaty obligation to cooperate with the United States and Britain in a control organization for supervising a nuclear test ban. When I left Geneva around the 25th, I believe it was, of November, I predicted at that time, I said at that time, that I thought that our talks had resulted that our talks were of significance, that the negotiations had gotten down to substance rather than agenda, and I felt realistically optimistic. In talking with Mr. Khrushchev, I came away with even more optimism. I had also had the chance to speak to Mr. Kuznetsov, the Deputy Foreign Minister of the Soviet Union, who was the top political officer of the Soviets at Geneva. I spent an hour and a half with him, about 30 minutes discussing my then proposed trip to Moscow, asking for his cooperation on a couple of matters, and an hour discussing with him on the Geneva talks. I found that insofar as the surprise attack conference was concerned, a very firm and almost harsh attitude on the part of the Soviets. This was confirmed again when I talked in Moscow with Mr. Khrushchev. But Mr. Kuznetsov indicated to me a negotiating attitude relating to the ban on atomic tests with controls. And this was fortified later on by my visit with Mr. Khrushchev. So I am still quite optimistic about the probabilities of a full-fledged agreement. I wouldn't expect it too soon, however, because there are still some points of difference between the three countries, or you might say the two sides, plus the fact that I doubt that the Soviet Union is going to agree to much of anything until after the NATO meetings. There's a sort of a special stepped-up version of the Cold War on between now and December 16th. Our third objective was to carry out a request of the Senate in a resolution adopted by the Senate to explore the possibilities of further international cooperation in the field of medical research. Our country already does a great deal in this through our National Institutes of Health, the United States Public Health Service, and through a large number of private agencies. I happen to be one of those that believes strongly in the exchange program with the Iron Curtain countries. I think this is highly significant and important, particularly with the satellite countries. They hunger for and long for contacts with Americans. And it is my sincere belief and observation that the exchange program is very good in the Soviet Union, that the more that we can have, the better we're going to be off. And that, to me, is means this, that even if we have to take many more Russians into the United States and we can send Americans into the Soviet, it's still to our advantage. I did not find an expression of anti-American feeling to the people that I talked to in the Soviet Union except the leaders. And we talked to many people, particularly young people, children of the what we would call the elementary and secondary school age. They were keenly interested in Americans, fascinated by our clothes and dress, interested in the fact that we were from America. And therefore, I'm convinced that the more that we can do in this contact, the better. And the best place to contact them is in areas where they feel a degree of equal competence. These are a sensitive people. And the leadership is obviously afflicted with a kind of insecurity which manifests itself in a sort of arrogant buoyancy. Therefore, the study in the Soviet Union on medical research was a very important one for us. We visited with doctors, scientists, the vice president of the Academy of Medical Science, the deputy minister of health, the minister of agriculture, the minister of higher education, one of the top doctors of Soviet medicine, Dr. Blockheim, who is well known by our own Dr. Shannon out here at the NIH. And I can say to you that we found enthusiastic cooperation for the objectives of expanded cooperation between the USSR and the USA in the field of medical research. I found also, and I weigh these words carefully, enthusiastic approval from the Soviet Premier, Nikita Khrushchev. I went over this international medical research program with him three times in our visit. I talked to him about certain objectives that we had in mind. In fact, I reviewed them just before I left his office. One of them was the further implementation and the broadening of the medical exchange provisions of the Lacey-Zerubin Agreement. There are certain parts of it that have been agreed to but not implemented, and I asked for his help in implementing them. And we discussed it for about 2 hours. He assured me of that help. I also asked for additional progress in a two-way flow of medical research materials, bulletins, documents, data, and was promised that this would be undertaken, both by the Deputy Minister of Health, Dr. Zadonov, and Mr. Khrushchev. I also asked for expanded personal contacts between students in the medical field as well as the professors and the specialists. And this likewise was looked upon with considerable favor. And finally, I urged cooperation of the Soviet in implementing a so-called medical or an international year of medical research and health. I introduced a resolution like this in the Senate last August. It was adopted. The Ukraine, Soviet Republic, introduced the same sort of resolution in the United Nations. I understand that the UN has now adopted such a resolution just recently. The Soviets assured us of cooperation at the next meeting of the executive board of the WHO. Already, the activities in the WHO, World Health Organization, are underway for this expanded medical research program. Now, where does it center? Heart disease, cancer, neurological diseases, physical rehabilitation, radiation medicine, this whole problem of radioactivity. When we were in Paris, I was present the day that 6 or 7 Yugoslavs had been brought into the Radium Institute with Dr. Laterje in charge, and they were the victims of a terrible nuclear reactor accident. They had received literally lethal doses of radioactivity. The amount of rentigens, I've forgotten the exact figure, but tremendous amounts, where the marrow of the bone had literally been melted away, and some very spectacular operations were taking place for the first time. It's now obvious that we need decided more experimentation and research in radiation medicine. We've had some accidents in other parts of the world. Very little knowledge of it. The Soviets showed keen interest in it, as they did in cancer research, and as they did in certain types of cardiovascular research. We finally left a note with Mr. Khrushchev about joining with us in a program of what we call perinatal research. This is research relating to the child before birth and after birth. Mental illness, physical malformation, the problems relating to children. And I said to Mr. Khrushchev that no matter how effective your 7-year plan may be, no matter the amount of efficiency that you place into it, it can never compensate for the loss, the economic loss, say nothing of the other kinds of losses, that comes from sickness of children. Because every year the Soviet denies itself hundreds of thousands of well children, just as we do, for the failure to really do a job in this research field. Now, this isn't what you call a sort of spectacular type of program, my friends, but I'll conclude on this note that I don't think we're going to make any progress politically with the Soviet for a long time. No great political decisions seem to be in the offing. Therefore, it is of the utmost importance that we maintain people-to-people contact and that we learn to live in the same world. There's a new group of people coming up in the Soviet. You can't educate this many people without having some changes. And my feeling is that by contacting these Soviets, and particularly the others, the Poles, the Romanians, and the Hungarians, and others, on the non-political basis, contacts through our teachers, our doctors, our scientists, our engineers, our most capable people, we are able to maybe condition the social and ultimately the political environment for some political settlements. Now, I said maybe, I don't know. But I know that just by vituperation and vitriolic language and threats and counter-threats doesn't get you any place. If I came away from any one thing with my visit to Moscow, it is that the policy of threats is barren, sterile, and futile. You're not going to frighten these people, and they're not going to frighten us. The only chance we have for any kind of long-term settlement or rapprochement is through these exchanges. And I want to commend Mr. Lacy of the State Department for work beyond the call of duty in negotiating this exchange agreement. Now, you shoot.
Senator, may I ask you, do you believe that Khrushchev thinks that the Democratic victory on November 4th will influence American-Soviet relations for the better?
I'm sure that Mr. Khrushchev believes in probing any possibility. I left him with I'm sure, a firm view that the foreign policy of our country, insofar as objectives were concerned, was basically supported by an overwhelming majority. I went to Berlin prior to going to Moscow. I could have gone to Berlin after going to Moscow. But I went first, and he knew what I'd been doing and what I said. I only wish some people at home were as attentive.
Senator, can you tell us a little bit more, without giving away any official top secrets, about the so-called secrets you're going to bring to Mr. Eisenhower?
Well, that's a word it's maybe a little unfortunate. Yet the fact is that Mr. Khrushchev did present to me in that conference two items, which according to our embassy in Moscow, had not been made available to our government. They have been made available in part, but I was asked to convey one particular message to the president, which I shall. And it was suggested to me in Moscow that it might be well that I report the other directly to the State Department and the Atomic Energy Commission, which I shall do at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Is this a new proposal by Mr. Khrushchev for any kind of a meeting?
No, no, it is not. It is not.
It involves an atomic matter, I assume, since you're going to report.
I said that I was going to report to the State Department and the Atomic Energy Commission. Yes, sir.
Are these in the nature of intelligence information that you mean?
I don't know what you'd term it, and
well,
I'm not.
I mean that he told you something about Soviet atomic or military progress.
Yes,
that
that's
we
right.
We have not known.
Yes, which I gather we have not. I can't imagine that we don't, but I. Our embassy, at least in Moscow, did not have information to that effect, and so it'll be reported.
How interested is the Soviet Union in disarmament to carry out their 7-year plan, Senator?
I don't think they're really, at this stage, well, let me back up and say, I had no information that indicated they were really interested in disarmament. They are interested, I'm quite convinced, in no war, at least for 7 years. I came away with that definite feeling. In fact, a war would end their 7-year plan.
Came away with the feeling that at the end of 7 years they'd be ready for war?
No, I did not. I did not say that. I said that I felt that at least during the next 7 years, that the success of their plan would depend on peace. And 7 years is 7 years for them and 7 years for us. 7 years for everybody, and it just depends upon what you do with time.
What plans are these people?
The 7-year economic development plan, which Mr. Khrushchev discussed at length, and which he will discuss this next week with the Central Committee of the Communist Party.
Well, if it depends on peace, why then do you think the situation in Berlin is sort of closer? If they've got to have peace, are they going to push us beyond the point?
Jack, it has always been my opinion that the Soviet was perfectly willing to pick up any unoccupied landscape or real estate or any area where the protectors could did not agree on the measures of protection. I have a feeling that the Berlin crisis, while it is serious and deep, is another action on the part of the Soviet to probe the Allies, to see whether or not there can be any falling out amongst the partners. And this is why I feel that the unity of these four partners is of the utmost importance. And if we maintain a unified position, I don't think there'll be any war over Berlin, and I don't think we'll have to get out. Nor do I think we should.
Why do you think Mr. Khrushchev asked you to convey a message to the President instead of sending it through the American embassy?
Well, Mr. Khrushchev is an unorthodox diplomat. I think Mr. Khrushchev likes to confound the norms of diplomacy. I think he indulges in this at no end. And by the way, I must say that I attended two receptions in Moscow, one at the Indonesian reception when the Indonesian foreign minister was there. He had just been in the States at Washington, and I thought it was a good idea for some of us to turn up at his reception in Moscow to show him that we were interested in his visit in Washington. I also attended the Yugoslav reception, both, it seems to me, rather significant countries today. And may I assure you that the Soviets were there in full power. Mr. Gromyko, Mr. Mikoyan, and Mr. Kuslov were there first at the Indonesian for 2 hours and 20 minutes, and then 2 hours and 15 minutes over at the Yugoslav, and they were doing business. And they didn't send any 30-second assistance. They were over there by the top men, two deputy premiers and the foreign minister. And they were seeing everybody that they could see and having their picture taken with everybody that would have their picture taken. It seems to me that what they're teaching us is that sometimes diplomacy is not always conducted in conference halls. It's sometimes conducted even in just reception halls.
Senator, you obviously asked Mr. Khrushchev a number of questions about his plans and so forth and about the feelings inside Russia. What were some of the things that he was keenest to find out from you about this country?
Well, Peter, I was there to ask the questions. I did ask a lot of questions, in fact, asked most all the questions. I recall about the only time that Mr. Khrushchev asked a question was in relationship to my interpretation of democratic capitalism. We had a good long discussion on ideology. And, well, if you ask me, I did. If you ask him, I think he did. I don't think we convinced each other at all.
Senator, in your press conference at Geneva before going to Moscow, you seemed to indicate you thought the nuclear rearmament of Germany was the key issue at the moment in East-West relations. After talking to Khrushchev, do you still feel that way?
I deeply regret that that is what has been the feeling of that conference. I have a recording of it. Just as there's a recording being made here today, I recorded every press conference I had, and they're all available for the State Department. I said that the Soviet Union doesn't conduct any conference in a vacuum, that everything is related, and that we would do well to understand this. I said I doubted that you could expect any results out of any conference until after the NATO meetings, that the Soviet conducts hard pressure, Cold War diplomacy every November and December, and they have ever since I can remember. The winters are long in Russia and cold, and they like to warm them up a little. And what I was saying was that the Russians undoubtedly are holding up the UN outer space talks and the UN, the surprise attack talks, the Geneva atomic inspection talks, also their fear of German rearmament. All of this is a part of a picture to bring pressure to bear on NATO.
To do what?
To NATO to soften. NATO allies to kind of split apart. This first objective of Soviet foreign policy is to disrupt NATO.
Split on what, Senator? On nuclear rearmament?
Germany, particularly.
On nuclear rearmament?
Any question relating to Germany. German reunification, Berlin. Whether I don't even know whether our policy is nuclear rearmament of Germany.
Did you say that you were opposed to nuclear rearmament of Germany? Which seems to be what was reported.
I said that I felt that the nuclear arms should be maintained in the possession of the United States government. I said that as far as I recall, that was the law. And I said that if, when I asked about whether or not the Germans were training their army for the use of nuclear arms, I said, of course. And any modern army should be so trained. But it's one thing to train an army to use them, and it's another thing to give them over to an army.
In other words, you came away with the feeling that there's still the German bugaboo is still in the Russian mind.
Yes, I happen to think, however, that the Soviets use this as a propaganda weapon much more than they fear it. I have good reason to feel that way.
Senator, a week ago, William Randolph Hearst proposed that we seize the psychological initiative on the basis of Khrushchev's statement that that the Soviets would not object to UN supervision of a pre-demilitarized Germany, Berlin. He suggested that this didn't go far enough and that we should seize the initiative and put the proposal to Khrushchev. And if he was willing to go that far, why not permit UN supervision of a pre-election to the unified Germany?
Well, this whole subject of German policy is not one that I think ought to be discussed in press conferences, even by me or by an ordinary senator, and surely not by a secretary of state or a foreign minister. There needs to be a unity of policy on the part of the Allies relating to this entire subject matter of German reunification and the issue of West Berlin, because the Soviet is using this issue to great advantage wherever it can. There are apparently some indication of differences over West German policy. It seems to me that what is needed, and I have so advocated, a foreign minister's meeting as soon as it is possible of the major powers in the NATO alliance relating to Germany, so that we have a clear-cut position, an understandable one for one and for all. In other words, that the UK, the French, the Italians, the West Germans, that we all understand what our policies are and that the policies be the same. I think that basically our policies are in unison, but every once in a while someone will make a little statement that indicates some slight deviation. And at that moment, the Soviet seizes upon it. Therefore, I think you really need what you might call closely unified Central European or particularly German policy.
Senator, can we deal with Khrushchev any better than we could deal with Stalin, keeping in mind that President Truman said today that in the first year after Potsdam, the Russians had violated the agreement 32 times, and the only way to deal with them is to have more guns?
Well, I don't know whether you can deal with Mr. Khrushchev or not, but I know that you're going to have to live with him or die with him, one or the other.
Senator.
Just a minute. Excuse me, Roscoe. You're going to have to live with him or die with him, because both nations have the power to deliver terrific blows of nuclear power. Now, I happen to be one of those that believes that the nation ought to be strong, our nation and our alliance. I don't think just our nation. And I want to say that the emphasis should be not just on United States power, but upon allied power, and not merely military power. This man, Khrushchev, has been saying repeatedly that he is challenging us on the economic front. And the one weakness of the West today is on the economic front. Individually, we're strong. Collectively, we sap each other's strength. And I don't believe that it is sound policy just to emphasize the military. I happen to believe in a strong military defense, and I think less talk about it and more defense would be better. And I might say that I don't think it's a good idea to talk about cutting the budget on defense at the time that the Soviet is putting on the heat.
Senator,
Mr. Drummond. Yes, sir.
Do you apply that judgment to ending nuclear tests?
No. No, I do not. When I say politically, Roscoe, I'm talking about such matters as the German question, for example, as any kind of basic disarmament plan that will involve either Central Europe or the total disarmament picture. No, I am optimistic about the so-called nuclear test ban. I happen to feel that two events have developed which indicate this, which substantiate this optimism. Number one, the Soviet has talked so long about stopping the bomb tests that it no longer can run away from it once the conference is underway. Secondly, in July of this past summer, they agreed to a test inspection system. So you have two things standing side by side, and this past week, or the past 10 days, they have permitted them to be blended into one instrument. And that's why I say that the possibilities are that there'll be an agreement there.
Senator, on that,
which is significant to me.
On that,
with your conversion of exchange of scholars and so on between us and the Soviet Union, did the Morris Pasternak case come up in your discussion with the future?
It did not. I regret that I did not bring it up, but I did not. I had exactly 20 minutes notice of this interview.
Senator, on the atomic test thing, but you were in Geneva, Albert Gore in there, I think just after you left.
No, he was there before I arrived.
Before you arrived, and he came back here and said that this was that he disagreed, in effect, with our proposal and proposed that we not stop all tests, but only ones in the atmosphere, and that this should be done unilaterally first and then try to get a treaty on it. Do you differ with Gore on this or what?
Well, let me put it this way, with due senatorial courtesy. My view is that you need an agreement on the banning of nuclear tests with an effective control system. The system has been agreed to. It is maybe not foolproof, but it is a workable, reliable system. And if you can get that system of controls in an agreement to prohibit tests, it should prohibit all tests. Tests in the atmosphere, tests underground, tests at high altitude. As a matter of fact, tests in the atmosphere are as old-fashioned as a flintlock gun. There is no problem of detecting tests in the atmosphere. The real problem today is detecting underground tests. And that's why you need an inspection agreement. Furthermore, an inspection agreement has political significance. It will be the first time that the West has been able to operate in a real sense behind and in the Iron Curtain, because this calls for mutuality, mutual exchange of inspectors. It calls for free movement within the Soviet Union of these inspection teams. As I said on February 4th of this past winter, in that speech on disarmament, I think that the breakthrough, the Iron Curtain, the political breakthrough of an inspection system is much more significant than the breakthrough into outer space, because we got a lot of living to do on Earth here yet before we ever get into outer space. Senator, so I disagree. I must say that I disagree.
Senator, McCoyan was with you at that conference.
Yes,
sir. What did he do at the conference, and did he tell you what products they wanted to sell to us?
Well, that was why he came into the conference. I had asked Mr. Khrushchev a great deal about trade, and he indicated that I should talk to Mr. McCoyan, and then he called him in. The next day, I met with Mr. Kuzmin, who is the deputy minister of trade and their expert. And I asked him four questions. What do you want to sell? What do you want to buy? How do you intend to pay for it? And when are you going to arrive at an agreement on a debt repayment schedule? Because of the Johnson Act, which prohibits trade or limits trade for those nations that are in arrears on debts and have indicated no willingness to arrive at some kind of adjudication or settlement of their debts. Whether they pay them or not is not the question as to whether or not they have a system of repayment. And I was given a complete list. I want to say that I was never so surprised as when I saw the list of trade arrangements that had been made between the United States and the Soviet Union since 1928. This Mr. Kuzmin had all the notice of a morning and a few hours. I think he must have had 6 or 8 hours notice. And when I came into, or less than that, when I came into his office, he had sheet after sheet in handwritten writing of trade figures starting with 1928 on every commodity that the Soviet Union had ever sold us by month and by year, and then showing how this had tapered off the last few years. Every commodity from crab meat to caviar to manganese to asbestos to antimony, tungsten, lead, zinc, ferro alloys. And he listed there for me the commodities not only that they could sell but that they had sold and were no longer selling. And then I asked him what commodities they would buy. And I think you know full well that Mr. McCoyan has said again and again they wanted petrochemical equipment. They're way behind in their petrochemical.